You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 30th, 2017, and episode number 315. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And still finding a little bit of a I don't know what you'd call it, but feel much, much better. The merits of modern medicine sometimes can make you turn a corner quick and make you crazy at the same time. So I don't know. I feel much better and really want to apologize to everybody for the last couple of weeks that I've done a show. I missed at least one show that I remember. I don't remember. I've been in a fog lately. But for all the hacking and coughing and just struggling, the show I did even last week was really a struggle. And, you know, I hope I didn't make you guys struggle of listening to all that, but appreciate you guys still supporting the show and coming in to listen tonight. Hopefully you're there. I don't know. Are you there? I don't know. A couple people there. That's great. But again, feeling much better, and hopefully we can put all this behind myself and behind you guys, the listeners, and especially Cindy, who's had to do a ton of work to edit out all the hacks and coughs and all the not so pleasurable moments on this end of the mic. So big thanks to her, as I thank her every week, but still, this has made her put on a ton of work to edit everything, as she does so wonderfully and make me sound like I'm that much better every week. But anyway, this week, we got a continuation. This story, I don't even know what to say. I've had thoughts about this the last couple of days, and I still can't wrap my mind around even what I'm going to say tonight. So I'm just going to let it go here. The Owlman story, it's out of control. And just when I think it's going to take a little bit of a break, or everything's going to level out and I'll have some time to kind of sort of decompress and sit back and just try to look at some of this information, boom, something else happens. And it's been happening the last few days. There's been new reports and new things. And Lon Strickler has been awesome keeping me abreast of what's going on. As he publishes things, he's sending me the links right away and keeping me informed as to what's going on. And I'll keep you guys informed as well. It's really a wacky story, and it continues to evolve. We're talking about that tonight. Also, we're going to talk a little wow signal. Yes, the wow signal of 1977, the clock is ticking. In a couple of days, we're going to get an answer as to whether or not Professor Antonio Paris's work will actually solve that or not. We'll find out. I'll tell you the details here in a minute. And we'll talk Frogzilla. Frogzilla has baffled the world. Anytime I see the word baffles, I've got to talk about that story. There was a few baffles this week, but we're going to talk about this Frogzilla thing. It's kind of funny. And we'll also have the book of the week. Not from this week. I don't have one this week. The reason why is I completely forgot last week of the book last week, and it was perfect for the episode last week. But again, struggling a little bit with the throat and the voice, and went through a whole entire big thing of hot tea last week, and it didn't keep me going. So book of the week last week, we're going to talk about in depth this week. And got a whole bunch of books. My goodness, I've read I've got a whole bunch ready to go, and excited about that. I got more books coming in the mail too. I need help because I have too many books. Who's kidding? You can never have enough books. Anyway, this week's episode is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. And I spent a little bit of time, let's see what date was this, a couple of days ago, actually yesterday, I added some new events, and I know I added some over the weekend to the events listing at paranewsinsider.com, and you can click on the events tab right there at the top, the second little tab there, right next to home, and that'll take you to the events. I've added a whole bunch of stuff, so if you haven't seen it in the last couple of days, go on there. You might need to refresh the page just so everything loads, but tons of stuff. My goodness, I can't believe how many, and I know I don't have them all. There's no way I have all the events here, but a ton of ghost conferences. I've added some UFO events, even one for next year already. The MUFON Erie UFO conference. That's two E's. I don't know if they realize that or not. There's really only one E in Erie, but it's the Erie UFO conference. 2018 has already been announced for May 5th. Unbelievable. Can we get through 2017? Please. Okay. Anyway, lots of UFO events. Added some cryptozoology events as well, so check out that list. I appreciate a lot of people have commented that they use this as a way to plan what they're going to go see, and I appreciate that. It's a little pressure though, because you know, now I feel like I have to make sure that I have as many as possible, but it's hard. It's a lot of work to search constantly. There's new ones all the time popping up. Even a couple of months from now, there's it's just never ending. There's just so many events out there. It's really hard to keep track of all of them. And I want to make sure I put ones on here that not just the big boys, but some of the smaller ones that are dealing with local groups and smaller events, but also making sure that I'm not putting ones on there that are going to be controversial in the fact that they may not be pulled off, or ones that are stealing money from people. I don't think that's really happening much anymore, but trying to bring you the best of the best out there as far as events. And the cool thing, which we're going to talk about here in a second, is that I put my name on there anytime I'm presenting at any of these events, and there's quite a few of them. I'm pretty surprised. And it's weird because as I was going through this, making sure everything looked good, because I hate making mistakes on my websites, I noticed that I'm at a couple of ghost conferences, like three of them, and I'm at a UFO conference and also at cryptid conferences as a speaker. Kind of cool. Yeah. Kind of proud of that. And speaking of events, UFO events, Kecksburg UFO Festival coming up pretty quick. I was hoping to have my a new book published by then. I don't know if I'm going to make it or not, but it's going to be, my goodness, if you've never been to the Kecksburg UFO Festival, it is out of this world. Literally, it's a festival. It's a street festival. They have a parade. They have rides, carnival food, which I love. I spent a lot of money on that last year. Hot dog eating contest. They have a bathtub race. And I'm going to enter the hot dog eating contest, I think, this year. I didn't last year, but why not? As long as it's not on Sunday when I'm speaking, I might try that out. But Kecksburg UFO Festival, talk more about that as we get through the month of June here. Can we get through June before we talk about July? Yes, the Kecksburg UFO Festival 2017 takes place July 28th through the 30th, and that's at the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department. And if you've never been to Kecksburg, as you're going toward it, you might want to slow down, because if you go too fast, you might miss it. It's a very small area out in the middle of nowhere. It's south – well, it's not south. I guess it's a little southeast of Pittsburgh. Out in the middle of nowhere. It's near Greensburg, which is where Stan Gordon resides. And Stan Gordon has been helped putting this on for a number of years. He actually was speaking at an event here long before this was actually the Kecksburg UFO Festival. I think it's the 10th anniversary. I don't know if anybody really keeps track. But anyway, the conference itself takes place on the 30th on Sunday. And it's still, you'll want to come out Friday night. Friday night is when everything kicks off. We'll all be there at our tables. You can meet the speakers and meet all the vendors and everything. And it's insane. You'll see people walking around in costumes with aluminum foil hats. I guess you'd call it tin foil, but aluminum foil hats, and just a good old time. And it's Saturday is just all day fun. It's, you got to see it. It's incredible. And again, on Sunday, speakers, Stan Gordon, longtime UFO Bigfoot researcher and author. He's going to talk about a look back at some of the best historical local UFO and Bigfoot cases and an update on more recent UFO, Bigfoot, and cryptid encounters from the area. And if you've ever heard Stan Gordon speak, he tends to do the similar presentation over and over for a few events, which is the same thing that most of us do. But he's got a new one this year, and I'm thinking by reading this description that this is going to be maybe even a little bit more updated. So I saw some stuff when I saw Stan speak in the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure a couple of weeks ago, stuff that I've never seen before. So if you're a fan of Stan and you're in the area, you got to go and see this. Plus you don't want to miss this event. If you're into UFOs, Bigfoot, or even ghosts, I don't think anyone's talking about ghosts, but, I'll be there. Ron Murphy will be there as well. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be talking about the foundation of UFO research and investigation. Kind of really the first time I'm talking about UFOs publicly. I've done a couple of smaller presentations for a couple of paranormal groups that were getting into UFO research, and I kind of showed them some of the correlations and differences in anomalous research geared towards ghosts and how it differs in the UFO arena, but never done an actual UFO presentation. So I'm really excited about this. And again, I've been working on a book. So this is kind of the unofficial launch of the book, which is, I wouldn't want to do it anywhere else but the Kecksburg UFO Festival. Other speakers, Colin Schneider. He's of WCJV Radio, right? Cool that we're both there. The Crypto Kid radio show host, he will be speaking on Cryptozoology 101, which is kind of cool because that's what I've been doing, probably the last 2 or 3 years now. So it's good. Maybe I'm passing the baton to him, and he can start doing all that all over the place. And I can move on into UFOs for a little while and then kind of double back and do some ghost stuff. But it's going to be fun. I've presented at Collins School. And I've been to events where I've spoken that he's been to, and it's going to be exciting to now share the stage with Colin. He's a very brilliant researcher. Obviously, if you listen to his show, great show host. It's an awesome show that he has right here on WCJV. So I'm excited to share the stage and to be there to support him in a very big event. Hope he's not nervous because there's going to be a lot of people there. It's a lot of fun. He was there last year. And we had a lot of fun. And Ron Murphy will also be speaking, author of numerous books, also a radio show host. He's also an actor, which is kind of cool. And he's going to be talking about the unexplained world of Chestnut Ridge, a hike through Western Pennsylvania's goblin universe. Chestnut Ridge, I'll tell you what, that's the place to be if you're into anything anomalous, whether it's UFOs, Bigfoot, or even ghosts. It's a very magical place. Very mystical, and there's so many stories of the paranormal. And this is a really good lineup, not because I'm in it, but both Colin and Ron are excellent researchers. And obviously Stan with, I think it's 5 decades worth of research and investigation behind him. This is going to be a huge event. It's going to be really good. And the thing about it is, you may wonder, well, why all of a sudden are you, Colin, and Ron just jumping up there and speaking? It's because they like to keep the Kecksburg UFO Festival fresh. So every year they kind of move people in and move people out and keep it, like I said, fresh, get new blood in there, get new people in there. And besides Stan, I think the three of us are going to do a really, really good job. I know I love watching Ron Murphy speak. So much great knowledge and information. And I've never taken so many notes, because when I go to these events, I go there to learn from the speakers as much as I do to go up there, stand up there and feed my own ego to speak to other people. And I've never taken so many notes until I read or I listened to Ron Murphy speak and was able to take a lot of notes. And it got me into his books. And I still got a couple chapters to read on his latest book, which will be the book of the week pretty soon, which is called On Ghosts. Really good book. I don't want to give it away, but excellent book. Not because my name's in it, but it's a very good book. We'll talk more about that later. So that's your lineup for the 2017 Kecksburg UFO Festival coming up at the end of July, July 28th through the 30th, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Don't miss it. Get your tickets now. Get some get somewhere to stay too, because it's fun. And that's at the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department. And behind the fire department is a scale model of the purported acorn-shaped UFO that landed pretty close by to that area that was used in a television show. I can't remember the name of the something mysteries. I don't know, but I was on TV, so it's there. It's pretty cool. And speaking of Pennsylvania conferences, August 5th, I'll be back in Pennsylvania at Johnstown, Pennsylvania. That's the home of the flood. It's an event called Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania. Don't have a whole lot of information about that, but I can tell you that it's just not paranormal stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff that people talk about at this event. Again, Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania. So it's strange stuff that happens, not just paranormal stuff. And again, that's August 5th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And then August 19th, I just signed up for this one. Looking forward to this. It's actually in Ohio. Wow. I haven't spoken in Ohio in quite a while at an event, a big event. And this is a nice fundraiser. I love the fundraiser events because you're doing something worthwhile, and it's not just about a group or about a speaker or about putting on an event and making money. This is about a fundraiser. And granted, you know, I enjoy the fundraisers, whether it's helping out locations like St. Albans Sanatorium, keep their doors open to people. But this is a special one. This is called the Goose Project 2.0, and it's an MS fundraiser. And that's going to be held at the Prospect Place Mansion in Trinway, Ohio. Looking forward to that. And again, I'll have more information as we get closer. My goodness, it's the middle of August. And let's see, last but not least, I want to mention an event that's actually taking place tonight. He's not in the chat room, so I can say whatever the heck I want. He's not there. Good. First time that I'm happy that a listener is not in the chat room. But tonight, a friend of mine and a friend of the Paranormal News Insider and the network here, he's a frequent chat room hanger outer. I don't know what you'd call that. Chat room frequenter, something like that. Anyway, Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report is hosting his own roast tonight. Well, it's a host or roast, but I suggest roasting them. Tonight, Tuesday, May 30th, 9 p.m. Eastern. And if you've never heard this before, well, that's okay. You're definitely not alone. I think he's only got 20 listeners, something like that. I don't know. It's a great show, though. Trust me. It's I was once a guest, I think about 7 years ago, because someone canceled at the last second. But anyway, it's a great show, and it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of people are going to be calling in. I know I will be, as long as I have a voice. And roasting him a little bit and toasting him. It's a roast and toast. Again, live tonight, Tuesday, May 30th. So if you're listening to this in an archive, well, you missed it. And you can find that show tonight, again, 9 p.m. Eastern at tmr247.net. We don't normally advertise other shows, but he's a friend of the network, so we're going to do that. And let's jump into some cryptid news before the show is over. I think we have to get into some news here, and we'll talk the Owlman or Mothman. This is, again, I just can't wrap my mind around what direction I want to go with this. Is this really happening? People are reporting it. Is this a hoax? I don't know. It's just so much information coming out. And this is happening in the Chicago, Illinois area, not the suburbs, But some of these sightings have been pretty close to downtown, usually on the south side of Chicago, and a lot of them along the lake. And these sightings are piling up. And the 9th documented sighting this year, a woman reached out to, I guess 9th overall since 2011, a woman reached out to Lon Strickler at phantomsandmonsters.com, who's been keeping me updated about everything that's going on. Now, she reached out to him after doing research online to help her understand what she might have seen. Now, she stated that her and her boyfriend were near the 127th Street and Ashland Avenue at approximately 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, May 27th, when they witnessed a strange object in the sky. Now, initially, the woman thought it was a black helicopter, but she was shocked when she was able to get a better look at the creature and realized it was a, quote, large black flying man with wings, unquote. Weird. Now, even stranger about this ongoing case is that the case I mentioned last week here on the show, it actually has another pair of witnesses. And this incident was witnessed by a woman, her friend, and another person that witnessed not one, but two of these large creatures flying over the water. And they were screeching loudly at each other. So not only visual, but now they heard some screeching, so some communication. The sighting occurred near the water in what was described as an area full of joggers and people. So I was hopeful that there was potentially some more witnesses, and it happened. Now, the second set of witnesses to this same sighting came forward to UFO Clearinghouse and was posted on May 26th. A woman, her mother, and her daughter were walking around the Chicago Riverwalk when they witnessed a winged creature fly over the Columbus Drive Bridge. Now, the Columbus Drive Bridge is a drawbridge, and it's 21 feet above the water where the bottom of it is. And strange, this bridge was actually in the movie Transformers Dark of the Moon, which came out in 2011. And that little battle up there. Now, she described this creature as an owl or bat, a bat-like creature, humanoid with red eyes. Now, this is just like the other description of the same sighting, and the woman stated that it almost looked like a person in a wingsuit, which is weird because that's exactly what the other witness said. And she stated the creature never flapped its wings. However, she said that she has been skydiving before and has seen demonstrations of wingsuits and did not think it was possible to be the explanation. But again, it's interesting, though, that both witnesses would think of the same thing. Granted, she probably read what this other person had said and might just be commenting on that. That's kind of what I'm thinking along those lines, because they're just basically, these researchers are paraphrasing what these people are saying. So I don't know what the conversation was along those lines. Now, yesterday, on Monday, another report was published by Lon Strickler of phantomsandmonsters.com from an incident that took place on May 22nd in Cicero, which is a suburb of Chicago and is near the heart of where a majority of the sightings have taken place this year, as well as the I think it was three sightings took place in 2011. So kind of in the heart of this area. Now, a truck driver observed a flying humanoid around noon on May 22nd. So right in the middle of the day. And again, he's a truck driver. He was picking up a load. I believe it was a load of bread. And he was there on the dock, I guess. And he was not alone in seeing this creature, as he states there are three other witnesses to this sighting. He stated the flying creature was coming from the south, which is in the direction of the very large Midway Airport, which is interesting. I wonder if they have anything on radar. Not sure about that. Now, he thought it might be an experimental drone or what he says, quote, secret government military test, unquote. I don't know about that. I don't think that they're going to use a major airport for military tests, but I don't know. Now, he simply described what he saw as, quote, "The object looked like a man with wings, like Batman."
I know, wasn't me.
Holy cow. I guess Batman's here. You might want to warn me next time you do that. That's crazy. Ugh, don't scare me like that.
I'm here every week.
Oh, he's here every week. That's really scary. I got to make sure I wear pants. Well, since the sighting, the witness claims to have had a series of medical issues since his sighting and now seems to have a rare eye condition. That's kind of weird. In a week's time, I don't know about that one. But he also states that his mother died around 3 weeks ago, which would have been before the sighting. These issues are more than likely not connected to the sighting, I really don't think. But the witness seems to know a lot about the Mothman and stated that this creature looked exactly like what appeared in a photograph taken in 2011 of this purported creature. And you may not have seen this, but I'm going to post this here in the chat room, hopefully. This guy will come in here. So yeah, it's kind of big, but you see the picture there. There's a little circle there behind this Indian guy that's standing on top of the building. And lo and behold, there's this weird winged creature. Now, apparently that's what they're seeing. And again, this photograph took place in Chicago. So this was back in the 2011 sightings of the same creature. So I don't know what this guy, this creature did for 5 years. I don't know. Maybe he was on vacation. But really, I don't know. It's really interesting to see this, but it's kind of interesting that this person would do all this research. But again, I guess if you see something like that, you kind of want answers. So you're going to kind of look around and scour the internet and look things up. And I remember that when this picture came out, there was a lot of controversy about these sightings. And it kind of just happened real quick. It was just three sightings. And then this picture came out, boom, done. That's why I mentioned when the stuff first started coming out, I kind of refreshed my mind on this. I had some notes on this from shows gone by. And there was a lot of feeling that that photograph that I just posted in the chat room. If you're not in the chat room, well, you missed it. You missed it. Yeah, it looks like a Native American guy directing air traffic, maybe saying hi to the aliens or whatever that thing is. I think that used to be a smoke shop years and years ago from what I understand. I don't know what it's, it looks like a pharmacy now, but it's a pharmacia. There was a lot of thought that this was a hoaxed photograph back in 2011. It was just playing on these sightings just to generate a little bit more interest in what was really there at the time. And this story this year is kind of that way as well. It's shaping up to be probably the biggest story, I think, so far of 2017, but I don't know. I'm still not convinced that this is genuinely some weird creature flying around, or it's Mothman type related, that there's going to be some sort of tragedy. And that's what a lot of people are worrying about. I know Lon has expressed a little bit of fear behind the story that possibly this is prediction of something catastrophic happening in the city of Chicago. And, you know, for this thing to be seen around bridges and around the lake there, you know, it makes you wonder what could possibly all that mean and what could be, going on with this story. But I don't know. It's just shaping up to be some weird stuff. But let me take a breath and let you know you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're at the bottom of the hour here. And talking about Owlman, this Mothman, crazy story unfolding this year. Numerous sightings. We're up to like 10 sightings this year. I can't even keep track anymore. And again, I'm not sure if this is some sort of elaborate hoax. There's a lot of people involved in it. Maybe it's just clever timing and people have lined up emails, but I don't know. It's just the more stuff that comes up, the more witnesses that pile up, it's getting harder to argue that this is a hoax. But what are people seeing? And I think time will tell, and we'll see what other information comes out about this case. Now, one major issue I really wasn't going to talk about, but it is tightly related to this story, and it kind of unfolds in like a little map in a book. One thing leads to another, and it's all connected. So I kind of have to, unfortunately, talk about this entire story. Not that, you know, I don't want to bash this, but it's related. So I kind of have no choice, and it's public information. Apparently, one major issue has been that MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, has been getting a majority of these sighting reports, and a lot of people are reporting these strange creature sightings directly to MUFON at MUFON.com. And MUFON has decided not to release a lot of the information. They're keeping a lot of this stuff, regardless of personal information, just the sighting reports or sighting information, you know, not just personal information, which shouldn't be given out. They're keeping it confidential. They're keeping it under wraps for whatever reason. And Lon Strickler, he's been at the heart of this story, doing a lot of work and contacting witnesses and doing a lot of things. And apparently he kind of had a deal worked out with MUFON to where they were going to be giving him some information. But now they've cut him off. Lon Strickler states that MUFON has cut him off from further information. And again, I understand releasing case information prematurely isn't good. If a case is ongoing, sometimes you don't want certain information getting out there in case there are multiple witnesses. But again, if it's a hoax, if this is something perpetuated by a group of people, it's not going to matter anyway. But the more information we can get, the more we can research this and try to figure out if there is a logical solution to all this, or potentially somebody in the area can maybe solve this thing. Without withholding information from a story, it's gaining attention. I really haven't seen too much in the Chicago area, but it's only a matter of time, I think. Withholding any information from a story that's gaining attention at all in the media for the sake of anything other than confidentiality is pretty much pointless. I mean, we need to get this information out there. And on a side note, kind of related to this, you may wonder, well, why would they do that? Well, I think there's a little bit of personal stuff here that's affecting this decision to not give Lon the information. And I wasn't really going to talk about this, but I kind of thought about it before I went on the air and thought, well, you know, it's public knowledge, and I don't think that everything has I don't think the dust has settled on this issue, and it does involve Lon Strickler and MUFON. Not really directly Lon, but Lon's kind of in the crossfire because he's a journalist, and he has his website, he has his news, he has a radio show, and he reports what's going on. And he just basically reported something that happened involving MUFON. And MUFON is under fire, really for not so much for what was said initially, but for the reaction to some racist statements made by one of their state directors that happened on their personal Facebook page. A personal Facebook page. So, you know, it's kind of a gray area there. But I know from myself, I mean, I don't think I'm really anybody. I'm not a paracelebrity. I'm not well known. But I'm very careful as to what I put on my pages, on my social media. I do rant and rave every now and again about stuff, but I'm very careful as to what I put on there, not just for the public based on what I do in the paranormal, but also people that I work with are on there. And I've seen people lose their jobs over certain things that they've said about their companies and different things. And you've just got to be careful what you say on your personal stuff. I understand about freedom of speech, but you just have to – if you're out in the public eye, you've got to keep it in the back of your mind that whatever you're going to say is going to be picked up by a lot of different people that follow you. And not everybody that follows you is really your friend. I mean, or an actual friend. I mean, because if you're out in the paranormal, if you're a public speaker, if you write books, there's people that follow you because of the work you do. And they don't care about pictures of your dinner or your family members or where you're going on vacation. They really don't care about that. They're looking at what you're doing as far as your books, your work, and, you know, your thoughts on different subjects. And when you say something that's just way out there, it will shock a lot of people. And, you know, we live in a different time right now where you really have to be careful of what you say on social media. Unfortunately, it's sad, to be honest with you, but you've got to be careful. And especially if you're a state director of a very large nonprofit organization that is trying to get – that's, you know, in the media quite frequently – you got to be careful. However, it wasn't so much what this particular state director said. It was how it was handled by Jan C. Harzan, who is the executive director of MUFON. Now, he made a public statement about what was said and put it directly on the MUFON page and essentially blamed the people that interpreted what was said by this particular state director, which is not how you handle things. And it was I was in shock because I was kind of going to ignore the whole thing. And the reason why I'm not naming this person, this particular state director, is because I know who he is and I know him. I've appeared at events with him, and he's a great guy. He's a nice guy. And, you know, sometimes people just say things that maybe they don't really mean to say or to get out there, or information just happens. And, you know, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle of this. So I really wasn't going to mention this, but it's out there, and I think it's affecting this Owlman story a little bit, because Lon has been talking about this on his pages, and I think MUFON is a little upset about that. But you can't just expect things to go away on their own. If you're going to make public statements, you're going to make public statements, and it's public knowledge about what happened. And damage control does not mean just cutting people off that you're working with. It's another domino, I think, unfortunately, to this story. And, you know, all this stuff happened a few weeks ago, and it's just been slow to kind of develop. And it's kind of shocking, because something like this that happens anywhere else, whether it's an actor or singer or somebody on the news says something stupid, or a sports celebrity or somebody, this stuff happens. It's swift. Something is dealt with. A decision is made, whatever happens. But this took several weeks. And even after these initial statements of kind of sweeping it under the rug, it was a little bit more time before anything was actually done about this. After continued backlash, that any action was made, and I think some major damage was done. Now, rumor has it, and I hate to say that, you know, I like to be factual, but again, this is a major thing that's going on here. I mean, racist statements made, and people feel that the reaction to this wasn't supportive enough of the sensitivity of the people that feel that this is racist. Whether it is or not, that's not my issue. My issue is, again, how it was handled by this organization. It's a little shocking. And again, rumor has it, I'm not sure of this allegation as of yet, but I've heard that a number of people have left some prominent positions in MUFON over this, such as state directors, and that others who have contributed to MUFON in the past are already saying that they're not going to do so. And one of these people, again, I'm not sure if this is 100% true, but I've heard that Nick Redfern is no longer going to be contributing anything to MUFON, which is that's major, because Nick is a major driving force in the UFO arena, cryptozoology, you name it. I mean, he is probably one of the most popular people out there. Again, I don't know how true that is, but even the rumor that's floating around about that is pretty powerful information. And again, that'll be a big blow for MUFON. And they've been really struggling to get their identity underneath them, working on their new case management system and a lot of other details, and trying to get things in line. And I mean, really, all I've seen is a new logo and an updated website. So they've got a lot of work ahead of them to gain the public trust, or to get their names out there a little bit more. And this kind of thing, this kind of controversy, is not something that a nonprofit organization can deal with. It's very hard. And while I'm not happy with what transpired, and I think people do overreact to simple rants on social media sometimes. Again, this is a very sensitive cultural time we live in, sad as it is. And again, I don't think this was handled very appropriately. But that being said, I still support the overall goal of MUFON and the organization as an entity. But this is certainly not something that's going to benefit this organization. And it's going to make, you know, there's stuff in the past about Bigelow Aerospace being involved in this and just a lot of rumors about MUFON not handling things correctly. And this is another black eye that they really cannot afford to deal with. But we'll see how all this settles and we'll see how much of all this stuff is true and what's going to happen with this. But unfortunately, it seems like this is affecting this Owlman story inadvertently because of some of the stuff going on between MUFON and Lon Strickler. But Lon has been really, really good about sharing this information to the general public and reporting on it, I think, in a very, very mature way. He's very critical of this information. He's not just a true believer sitting behind a keyboard. And I've mentioned some of these paranormal shows or paranormal websites. They just seem to – they get an email and they jump on a story and they blab it out there without even any critical thought. But that is certainly not how phantomsandmonsters.com operates. And Lon Strickler is an excellent researcher. And he's not just reporting this stuff. He's actually interviewing people. He's calling people. He's talking to them on the phone. He's a very good interviewer. And I've known Lon for a while. And he's a straight-up guy. He's not going to just use this for publicity or to make himself more famous or anything like that. He's just the truth, just like you guys do and just like I do. And he's been really good about giving me this information or sharing the information with me and a lot of other people. Not just me, but on the online report. And again, he's not just documenting this stuff. He's been interviewing people at length. And last but not least, I recommend – I know I've shared this through social media, and I shared it last – probably the last few times I reported on this. Lon has a map. It's on Google Maps, and it documents all the ongoing cases, three cases in 2011, and now 10 that have happened just in the last couple of months in 2017. And he keeps it updated as he gets reports. And let me share that in the chat room in there for you guys so you can get the nice little map. In case you didn't get it, it's really interesting how this is it's gives you a nice idea of where all these sightings have happened. And again, it's happening in the city. It's a big city, Chicago, and just weird stuff. Before I get too far ahead, I want to make sure I stop and talk about the book of the week from last week that I missed. And this is deals with the place that I was at. I was investigating and speaking at back a couple of weeks ago here, St. Albans Sanatorium at the event called Enigma Cons that actually took place May 19th through the 20th in Radford, Virginia. Great time. I kind of went through what was talked about last week and talked about what some of the people that were the speakers that were there that were talking about. And I kind of touched on the investigation and the whole process of kind of what we were going through. Some of my concerns about some of the stuff that I've seen in the ghost field. I really haven't been out in the field other than kind of assisting some groups over the years in quite a while, in a few years. I've kind of been ignoring these ghost hunting things. You know, I needed a bit of a break, and I got into cryptozoology pretty heavy, and putting a book out about cryptozoology kind of focused on that a little bit more than ghost stuff. But anyway, making it back to the ghost hunting field, it kind of opened my eyes a little bit about some stuff. But St. Albans Sanatorium, if you've never been there, it's a really weird building. It's a little confusing to navigate, but it's an excellent area to actually investigate. Excellent building, I think, just the way it's designed and everything. But the book of the week this week is called The Ghosts of St. Albans Sanatorium, and it's written by Pat Bussard O'Keefe, and there are actually two editions of this book, a color edition and a black and white, because there are a lot of pictures in here, diagrams, guides, and just information, or the same, I should say the same information kind of given out different ways. Obviously, one's color and one's black and white. There's a color edition. Now, the black and white edition has a color photo on the front, which is weird. If I did it, I'd make it black and white. But anyway, that's kind of weird for me to say. But anyway, I do have the color edition. I bought it at the directly from St. Albans Sanatorium. And you can buy this book through Amazon. You don't have to drive down to St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia, but you can get it on Amazon. And there is a color edition and black and white edition. I've given you the link for the color edition. The black and white version, I think, is a few bucks cheaper, but you're not going to get the cool color pictures. It's really, really cool. And the book kind of chronicles a lot of the stories, and it's kind of a first person kind of view of Pat being in this location and some of her feelings about it, some of her experiences of being in this location. And it shares a lot of the stories that have gone along with St. Albans Sanatorium. And unfortunately, there is not a whole ton of research. I'm a research guy, and I like facts. I like to read stuff about these locations. And I didn't really have time to really do a whole ton of research before going to this location. But I really wasn't worried about that, because it wasn't as if we were renting the location to go and investigate. We were just kind of minor celebrities that were just there to support or to add to the public that was investigating this location. So I wasn't really worried about it. But strange story, I don't think I shared this last week. We were actually at a restaurant, and I was looking through this book, because one of the major reasons why I bought the book, not other than the fact that it chronicles this location, it also helps benefit the location. The proceeds go to the location. But it actually has floor plans. It actually has maps in the book, which I love maps, any kind of maps, especially floor plans. Any area I investigate, I make floor plans for. If we go into somebody's house, I will draw a floor plan. I don't know. I'm just weird that way. That's just how I research and I investigate. It gives you kind of away from the location, gives you something to look at and something to refer to as you're looking at data or information or listening to audio or whatever you're doing, watching videos, and also take pictures. But unfortunately, a large location like this, I didn't have the time really to take pictures and look at prior to. But looking at the floor plan, I have a better understanding of where things are in relation to other things. And this is a really confusing location. But anyway, we were at this restaurant just prior to, this was after speaking on Saturday, and we were at dinner, and we had like an hour to eat and get back to St. Albans to do the investigation. The way they had us spread out, Nick Smith, who's a co-director of Ohio Anomalous Research with myself, he and I traveled down there together. We got to be in the basement, and we're cool enough. We were at the bowling alley. Well, they gave us a choice, and I wanted to be in the basement. It was nice and cool, and I felt the location would give us a pretty decent opportunity with the boiler room area and the bowling alley having some purported good activity, and you know, nice and dark. Not that I'm in favor of investigating in the dark, but anyway, it was a good solid location, I felt like, for us to talk or to hang out in, and to avoid some of the chatter that would be in some of these larger floors, hearing a lot of talking. We did hear some talking down there, but it was mostly kind of away from all that. We could tell where some of the stuff was going on from. But anyway, I'm studying this floor map, and our waitress, she brought some stuff out, and she was a girl. There was a university, Radford University, right down the street. So I'm pretty sure she was a student there. And she was walking by the table and stopped and looked down and saw the book. And she's like, "Oh, I wrote a paper on that, on some of the research." I was like, "No kidding, really?" And I asked her to forward that to me. She never did. Shame on you if you're listening to the show. But I was really looking forward to that, because I didn't realize that there was actual documentation on this location, because it's really kind of lacking in here. in this book. It's my only critique or critical thing about it. But other than that, this is a really, really interesting book to look at, especially if you've been there. Like before I was there, I kind of thumbed through the book really quick and looked at the pictures and some of the areas I didn't get to see prior to actually investigating, but I saw it in the book, and it was kind of cool. And looking at a lot of the groups that are related to this and some of their experiences is really neat to take away. And it's a really good book. Not all these locations have a good book like this to document things that are going on or things that have happened or some of the stories that have followed these locations. So this is a really good book in that regard to document ongoing things and the people that are involved in helping to save this location. And it does talk about the history, the basic history of the location, but some of the information is lacking, especially about some of the people that purportedly haunt this place. But again, other than that, this is a really, really good book. And whether you've even been here or not, it's still a great book to refer to as far as haunted locations in Virginia or even here on the East. Excellent resource, I think. And if I ever do go back, obviously, this book is coming with me with the floor plan. And gave me some – that alone, I think, is worth the book if you're going to go investigate there. Buy it for that alone if you want to research this place. Excellent information. Again, the book of the week, The Ghosts of St. Albans Sanatorium from Pat Broussard O'Keefe. The book of the week last week, but being reviewed this week. And a couple of stories. This one here, I'm just mentioning it because it's going to happen between this week and next week. It's going to break, and you may hear a lot about it. And I saw somebody in the chat room mention the Bigelow thing. I did mention Bigelow. Well, Bigelow has been in the news. I did read this about 60 Minutes. He actually said that he believes that aliens are here, or they've been here. Kind of weird. This guy's got a lot of money. He's not afraid to throw it around. He was involved with MUFON a long time ago and caused a lot of controversy about that. But he believes in all this stuff, and he's just trying to kind of, I don't know, help aid in the research and investigation process. And strangely enough, he's really talking about getting people out into space, and he's spending a lot of his money on getting us into space. And some people are speculating, you know, his ties with MUFON and now ties with getting out into space. What does he know? What's going on? But anyway, speaking of space, one thing that I do want to mention is about the WOW signal, which I've talked about this story off and on for the last couple of years. This has been a story. Now, this happened in 1977, and it was a strange radio signal that was detected by what's called the Big Ear Radio Telescope, which is no longer around. This happened outside of Columbus, Ohio, and has been one of the most mysterious pieces of information gathered in the distant search for extraterrestrial intelligent life. Now, yes, you have MUFON, and they investigate occurrences that purportedly happen here on Earth. And you also have SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. They're looking out in the cosmos. They're looking beyond our solar system out into other galaxies for signals. So they kind of don't think that the stuff is happening here. They're looking elsewhere. And that's related to this WOW signal. SETI was an early SETI project, was looking for this stuff, and they got a random radio signal. Now, this random radio signal has been unexplained since 1977, and the work was done to eliminate near proximity contamination, essentially noises that come from the Earth, whether it's local, you know, radio signals very close to the dish, or satellites in space causing some sort of noises, or any other false positive sources. All this stuff has been eliminated, and they know the source has come from the constellation Sagittarius in that general vicinity. Now, Professor Antonio Paris from the Center for Planetary Science feels that the source of the signal lies in two comets that were in the area of the constellation Sagittarius during the collection of the signal. Now, Paris waited until these two comets, well, at least one of them. I think only one of them was really in the exact range. The other one is won't be in the same area until next year. He waited until the comet was near the same location as in 1977 and conducted experiments to see if, in fact, this could be a source for the signal. And, you know, I was expecting this work to go through next year, but he's announced that he's published this earlier this year in a 16-page paper to the Washington Academy of Sciences. And the result of his peer-reviewed experiment will be revealed on June 4th. And he's been all over social media announcing this and talking about it, but he won't budge. He won't say anything. But to me, the fact that he's published something that's peer-reviewed, all signs would seem to point to the overwhelming odds that the signals detected from the release of hydrogen from these comets, he feels, or he's probably proven through this work, is more than likely the explanation for the WOW signal. But again, we'll have to wait until Sunday, June 4th, for the official announcement. Now, on one hand, I'm kind of saddened by this, the attempt to prove what this is, since the WOW signal, it's been an important mark and piece of hope, I guess, for finding intelligent life away from our solar system. It's the one thing that we have that we don't have an explanation for, and it's great that it's there like that. And personally, for me, I've had the experience of visiting the Perkins Observatory, where some of the remnants are kept in this little room, the ET room, where the computer that actually got the data sits, and part of the radio telescope are there, and because it's been gone for a number of years now, but a lot of the information is still there. The person who collected or interpreted the numbers and letter designation that was left there and wrote WOW and circled it in the margin. He's written some notes on a copy of this in that room, and it's just really neat to connect to that. So I feel a little bit more connected to the story than I did. I've always found it fascinating, but finally made it down there a few years ago to actually see this area. But on the other hand, it would be nice to have an explanation that is determined through peer-reviewed science if, in fact, these comets are the explanation. But it's interesting here to consider, what if the comets were not the source? It wouldn't prove that the signals came from aliens. But again, it would continue to be a mystery, which would be kind of cool. But again, I would think that Antonio Paris, with the fact that he's published his paper already and is teasing it, and just kind of the wording that he's used, I think this is pretty much he's going to say that this is it. And he was pretty convinced to begin with, despite a little bit of backlash. And I expect that when he does make this announcement, when this paper does, which I'm pretty sure it's going to say that the hydrogen signal is responsible for the WOW signal, there's going to be some backlash. There's going to be some people that are a little upset about this. And this is going to be a pretty big story. It's going to be in a lot of the media. People are going to be talking about this. Now, Antonio Paris is a planetary scientist, astronomy and astrophysics professor. He's also a Mars One advisor. But he's not just a scientist. He's also a UFO researcher, although a little bit more skeptical than average. But he's definitely not a hardcore skeptic. But I'm really looking forward to this, regardless of the outcome. It would be nice to have a final outcome. The last but not least, I want to mention the Froxzilla story that has the world baffled. Well, that's what the headline says of the story that discusses this viral confusion of this gigantic bullfrog seen in a photograph as the hunter holds a rifle. Now, is this a giant frog that was shot on the shores of a pond in southwest Texas? Or is it just trick photography here? The purported 13-pound, 3-foot-long bullfrog is shown in a photograph with Marcos Rangel. Now, the average bullfrog weighs just under 3 pounds. So this is huge, if it is in fact 13 pounds. Is it some kind of genetic misfit or a freak of nature? Now, the frog might be very large for the type it is, but I would argue that it's not as large as it appears in the photograph. Now, Marcuz, his name is spelled M-A-R-K-C-U-Z, Marcuz, is holding the frog out in front of himself, which creates an illusion known as forced perspective. Now, simply put, the frog is much closer to the camera than Marcuz is, since he is holding it out in front of him. Now, the key with this photograph, if you've seen it, and I'll share the link with you that has right here in the chat room if you're there live. And if you're not, you'll see it on social media during the week. Or I guess you can Google it, whatever you want to do. But I try to make it easy for you. Now, the key with this photograph is that you do not see his arm extended out in front of him, nor can you tell how far away the frog is from his body. Now, this lack of determining distance between objects is the key in pulling off an illusion like this with forced perspective. Now, this might not have been the intention. I'm not saying he's trying to fool people, but images like this have been seen throughout the years. You might have remembered the Hogzilla photograph of this kid sitting behind a giant hog. Now, he's sitting behind it, and you can't really tell how far away he is. He could be a couple of feet. That's the guesstimate by a lot of people who have seen this picture. And the camera is actually closer up to the hog than it is appears to be. So it makes it look a lot larger than what it really is. There's also a lot of photographs of fruit bats like this as well that make them look like they're 6 feet tall, when in fact they are still pretty large at about 3 foot tall. But forced perspective makes things appear at least double their actual size. And wow, it's 8 o'clock already. So that's the show this week. I made it without hacking and coughing, so that's a great sign. And I know there wasn't a ton of stories this week, but just I'm really, I don't want to say the word, but I'm baffled by this whole Owlman thing, and I think it's really interesting. Well, let me get the link here for this frog thing first, and I'll throw that in chat room for you guys. And appreciate everybody tuning in. Maybe you tuned out. I don't know. Some people do sometimes. I tend to put people to sleep. There's a link in the chat room there, and we're going to get do this cool thing. If you haven't been in the chat room, you're missing out on these cool little graphic things I make for the outro of the show. But anyway, I appreciate everybody coming out for the show this week. And don't forget the roasting of Jim Mallard tonight at 9 p.m. You got less than an hour to get some good material. And that show is at tmr247.net. He's in the chat room, so don't tell him what I said earlier. He'll hear it later. And with that being said, there it is in the chat room. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, and I know she's tickled that she won't have to do too much editing tonight. So I made it easier on her. That's my gift to you, I guess, this week. But really appreciate all the work she's done, especially all the stuff I put her through. And she's dealing with flooding up there in Youngstown, New York. Big thanks to everybody, Dita, and in the chat room for keeping everybody in line, and for Paul for keeping Dita in line there in the chat room. That's a hard job in and of itself. And for you, the listener, everybody else tuning in tonight, live or otherwise, the archives, appreciate you guys listening. I really do. And you guys keep me going each and every week. And I will see you next week. Well, you'll hear me next week, I guess. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.